Welcome to the Queen City Preachers podcast. I'm Pastor Andrew.
And I'm Pastor Molly.
And we're here at Messiah Lutheran Church in Marquette, Michigan. Thank you for joining us. We're continuing through our journey of Advent, looking at kind of the texts that go with the Revised Common Lectionary. But today's a slight twist because it's one that isn't the actual gospel lesson for this coming Sunday, but is often listed as a psalm. And it's Mary's Magnificat. So, yes.
But we're going to use it as a gospel lesson because it's very gospel-y.
It is. It's an awesome, awesome text. Mm-hmm. I mean, beautiful. And you're probably familiar with it, whether you've heard it sung or whether you've just heard it read before or read it yourself. It's powerful. So we'll read it and then we'll dive into it and go from there.
All right.
So this is the first chapter of Luke, verses 46 through 55. And Mary said, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has looked with favor on the lowliness of his servant. Surely from now on all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me, and holy is his name. His mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation. He has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy, according to the promise he made to our ancestors, to Abraham and to his descendants forever." All right.
Yeah.
So,
the Song of Mary, Mary singing this song.
Yeah, which Luke, out of all the Gospels, is kind of the singy one. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, Mary's is there. We also have Zechariah's song. We have Simeon's song. Mm-hmm. We referenced this earlier in the fall with Anna not having a song. But this is kind of the third. This is the most well-known one. All three of those, Zechariah, Simeon, and Mary's songs are all kind of enshrined in Latin liturgies. I mean, Mary's is the Magnificat. We have the Nunc Dimittis from Simeon, "Let your servant go." But it's part of Luke. Luke uses song. Mm-hmm. It's an absolute choice here, mm-hmm. that we're hearing this as a song.
Yeah. And I love that because music is such an essential part of who we are as people. And singing when we're joyful or just, I don't know, for any circumstance. I know we had our hymn sing this week for church. We did it on Zoom and everything like that. Which is an interesting way to do something, especially, you know, in the time of pandemic, everything's on Zoom. But there is such a joy about singing together.
And absolutely.
One of the things in Mary's song is that she sings in a time of a lot of doubt, a lot of, like, I would be terrified, right? If an angel came to you and said, "Surprise,
absolutely.
You're having a child."
Right.
Right? It could be such a different time, but she chooses to sing.
Yeah. And, you know, I think about this too, like what type of song is this, right? This is a song of anticipatory joy. It's a song of, like, abundance and the amazingness of God's graciousness and the promises that God has made. And I think I was reading something and somebody was like, but this almost feels like it should be the blues, right? Like, I mean, based on what's going on, like, how is Mary this joyful? How is she able to sing this way?
I wouldn't have been this joyful.
Right? I mean, it's profound because I think that, you know, that there are lots of different songs for lots of different moods, lots of different styles, right? I mean, we all probably have songs that are our go-tos when we're feeling certain ways. And yet here in this text, we have this, I mean, you can't help but read the joy in this, right? I mean, like, there's an energy behind it, and maybe you're thinking as you heard me read this and hear us talking about this, about a version of this song that you're familiar with or you like. I mean, the one that just thinking about that we've done recently here on Wednesday evenings is the Holden Evening Prayer version by Marty Haugen, sung Magnificat. But there are probably different ways that you've heard this or you even think about it, but also just thinking about how you think about a song of joy, right? I mean, what does that feel like? I know there are definitely versions of the Magnificat that I like better than others. And honestly, most of it's because they're more upbeat. They're more like, yeah,
Mary's crushing it.
I mean, which brings me like coming all the way around. This is a song of revolution. This is not like a, you know, I'm just happy song. This is a God is changing the world.
Yeah. Just like you had mentioned earlier, one of our other favorite hymns, The Canticle of the Turning.
Oh, I love The Canticle of the Turning. Yeah.
The my soul cries out with a joyful shout because the God of my heart is great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting because we hear those lyrics and we hear the words in this, in the Magnificat. And I wonder how we hear them, because I think that like, it's a joyful song. It's a powerful song. It's strident, right? Like The Canticle, The Turning. Like, I mean, I love it because it's kind of like, yes,
yeah,
the world is changing for good. There's an imagination that is moral, that is beyond human. Mm-hmm. God is seeking justice. But then when I actually break it down and I'm like, you know, it's going to throw every tyrant from their throne. I mean, like,
yeah,
like there's just kind of, there's a weighty power in it that is also like, is that really what we all want? Is that what's going to happen? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. Like there's part of me that's like, I don't know, this goes back to me thinking about songs when I was a kid and like totally mishearing lyrics, right? And I guess I wonder how well I hear these lyrics and let them actually sink in, or I let the joyousness of the music sometimes sugarcoat some of the the weightiness of these words.
Yeah. But what I hear you saying too is there's like a certain level of discomfort.
Oh, absolutely.
In what is being said within these songs. And thinking about that, you know, there's such a parallel to our text from last week too, right? The John the Baptist text where the hills shall be made low and the valleys shall be raised up. And Mary is kind of paralleling that in this,
right? Oh, absolutely,
right?
With the
poor. And thinking about what God does for people, one of the commentaries that I was reading was talking about, you know, God is not passive. God is not just with the people who are lowly, but God is bringing up the people who are lowly, an active presence in doing things for them. And then with the people who are the, I don't know, whomever you want to call them, the high and mighty being made low, right? We kind of think of that and being like, oh, well, what does that really mean? And one thing I loved about the commentary was they talked about Zacchaeus. Right? Zacchaeus, the tax collector who's up in the tree, and Jesus says, come on down, Zacchaeus. I'm going to come to your house and you're going to feed me. Mm-hmm. Right? Somebody who has a higher position in society, who has a lot of money. And then Zacchaeus's response to Jesus is giving his money away. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And not because he's been told to, mm-hmm. but because it's, in some ways, he's had this change, this turn.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's not necessarily just like, okay, all these rich billionaires are just going to suddenly become destitute and they're going to get kind of what's coming to them. It's a bigger change of heart that happens within people. And I think we can see, you know, we can directly correlate what Mary is saying within this to what happens throughout the entirety of the Gospels. Jesus sees people who are marginalized, who are poor, who are on the fringes, who very much need to be brought up and to see themselves as the beloved of God. And he does that. He raises them. And there are many who are the strong and the powerful, and not all of them realize it, right? And so we see kind of what happens when they don't acknowledge, right? There's the rich man, right?
Right, who turns away because he's unwilling.
When Jesus says, sell everything, he's like, no, I can't do that, and he leaves. And so there are those who don't, right? But there are those like Zacchaeus who do, and their hearts are changed, and it's not just about the poor getting something and the rich getting things taken away. It's that everybody receives something when this kind of change happens, when the canticle of the turning happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's that notion of transformation that's through this, which is really, I mean, and it fits, right? I mean, Mary's pregnant. I mean, this is a physical transformation for her. It's a transformation of bringing life into the world. It's transformation that's theological, I mean, in how we understand God, but it's, but it's also a transformation of society. And I think one of the things that's interesting to me is that this doesn't start here, like in Luke chapter one. This isn't where this notion first appears. We get this, I mean, in Hannah's song in 1 Samuel, that we get these connections to these words, to this notion of what God's promises look like, what justice looks like, what the world actually looks like in God's dream in some ways, right? That that there are those levels of equity and of equality and that justice and future exist for those who are on the margins.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that's really powerful to think about as we think about Advent, because it also allows us into thinking about that while this is societal in the sense that it's transformative of those who are poor, those who are wealthy, of all of us, of the entire world. This is what God has imagined all along.
Mm-hmm.
And that Christ coming into the world is a piece of that.
Yeah.
But that this doesn't start just because Jesus shows up. This has been, and in some ways we hear that because Mary talks about, my God has been this way. It's like this, mm-hmm. this past, present, future notion of like, it's God is this way. And I really like that because I think so often in Advent we leap to the manger.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be an Advent downer, y'all. I love
Don't
me some
be
Christmas
a bummer
songs
on Advent.
I love Christmas songs. And I love the light of Christmas. But I do think that there's something to be said about that this imagination, this notion of what God is doing exists before we get to the manger. It's
yes.
already there.
Yeah.
This is what God is seeking in the world.
I think that's always a good reminder for us too, especially as Christians, right? We neglect the Old Testament a lot. And many of our stories that we've been talking about throughout our podcasting time have been about the gospel and the good news in the Old Testament.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I think, you know, the Isaiah passage that we are reading in, you know, along with Mary's song this Sunday is Isaiah 61. And I want to share that a little bit of that with you. Because the words are powerful and the words are just a reinforcement of what Mary says. So Isaiah says this, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord has anointed me. And he has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who mourn in Zion, to give them garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of a faint spirit. They will be called oaks of righteousness. They shall build up ancient ruins. They shall raise up former devastations." And so I think that, and it goes on, and there's lots more, but, you know, it's just such a reinforcement of what Mary says, right? That God reminds us again and again and again, like, this is what I want for you people. How many times do I have to tell you? Like, I want good things for you. I want to raise up those who are, you know, on the margins, who are poor, who are oppressed, and I want to make life good for them. And I want the rich to see that their lives can be better when they come down to them too. And so, yeah, it's a continuation, right? It's a reminder. And Jesus's inbreaking is kind of the moment where God says, hey, I've like tried to tell you this over and over again. And finally, I'm just going to come down and I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're still not going to get it, but I'm going to try. I'm going to try.
And you're not going to like it too.
I think that's
another one, right? When you
It won't be comfortable.
Yeah. When you said originally there's like that discomfort with the canticle of the turning and these kinds of things, right? that people sense that and that we don't like that discomfort.
Yeah. And it's interesting thinking about that too, because it's a lot easier to project onto others in this, right? Like, it's easier to say, well, we're not the rich, so
right? We might be those
but
people.
But we might be. And so, and I think that like when we reflect in that way, it starts asking the questions of, okay, what does it look like for that transformation to occur? And how can we live with that discomfort? And in some ways, I mean, that's kind of the Christmas message, right? Is how, I mean, we talk about this metaphorically all the time. How do we let Jesus into our heart on Christmas, right?
We want it to sound so beautiful.
And it is, but when Jesus gets into our heart, Jesus is not messing around.
Yeah.
I mean, getting into our hearts, oof, right? I mean, like even just thinking like from a physical perspective, that's where the rhythms occur. That's where if it's out of whack, we get stressed, we get anxious, our bodies react, right? And just to think that we're inviting Jesus in to play with the rhythms of our life, to change that sense. And in this sense, like pulling back to the Magnificat, saying, God, we want you to come in and rock this boat. And bring in that justice that Isaiah speaks about, that Mary sings about, that we yearn for. And at the same time, realizing that it's not going to be comfortable.
No, and I think there's lots of things about the Advent season and Christmas that we make into this kind of almost like picture perfect image in our head of, oh, this, you know, this beautiful manger and Mary, you know, bringing this child into the world. And but like when you really get down to it and you really imagine what life was like for Mary, I know her song is beautiful and she is glad, but she still has to deal with the people who talk about her, right? As a young unmarried woman suddenly pregnant, right? She has to deal with the fact that at first Joseph doesn't believe her. She has to deal with kind of all of these things that are deeply uncomfortable and are very real. And so, you know, it's kind of a really kind of check ourselves moment where when we get too tempted into kind of, you know, making it this sweet, beautiful thing, that there are moments of it that are that. It's a both and. There are moments that are that, but there are moments that are very difficult and uncomfortable. And like you said, Pastor Andrew, I think that's so true about Jesus as well. I'm always very confused, I think, when people talk about Jesus as like I know that Jesus, not so much the loving thing, but like Jesus as like the friend kind of idea. Because when I read the Gospels, I was like, I don't know that I'd really want this guy to be my friend.
Yeah, he's kind of he's
more
pushy.
He's not like the comfortable friend who's going to like be like, when you tell them about something that really made you mad, who's going to be like, yeah, those people. He's kind of a surly, self-righteous person in many respects. And I mean that very respectfully.
Yet
but
loving,
it's just,
right? I mean, like,
it's just true, right? He cares about people, but it is in this very specific and challenging kind of way.
It's disruptive.
Mm-hmm. It's not really in a comforting, kind of cozy kind of way.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, we're not trying to rain on your parade if, you know, Jesus being, you know, if you're one of the footsteps in the sand type of Jesus carrying you, like if that's an image that you need, hold on to it by all means. Mm-hmm. But I think that the what we're wrestling with here and what Pastor Molly has raised is that too, is that when we deal with the nitty gritty and the humanness of God's incarnation, that Jesus is fully divine, fully human, that we deal with the messiness of that too, and the grouchiness, and that he is his, like, when he's seeking justice and seeking healing, he doesn't rub people the right way all the time. Like, I mean, they're not smooth edges. That Mary is an unwed, too young to be having a child mother. And that is deeply human. And when we allow that in, I think to me, it raises the question of, okay, so how does that transform this into something that both challenges me, but also deepens the understanding of comfort?
Yeah.
Because I think there's a depth there that actually is really helpful. Because I think having, you know, just stepping back to Mary, like, the fact that Mary's like, you know, I mean, let's just imagine that she's a 12-year-old or whatever it is. I mean, the politics of this, the historical social commentary about this, even some of the theological stuff, there's some crazy questions going on when we think about Mary, and we will save those for another day. But I think the question of how young, how vulnerable, who she is, what's going on in her life, mm-hmm. and yet she is able to say, okay, God, mm-hmm. I trust you.
Yeah.
And that's so amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Does the fullness of the story ruin the story for you, or does it make it more accessible to us?
Wow. And I guess that's a profound question for each one of us, right? Yeah. I mean, do we need the fullness, or do we need it to feel a little bit more, I don't know, carved out? And
I know, because
cleaned up.
You know, when you think about, especially this time of the year with Christmas time, right? There are so many things, especially from our childhood, that are very ingrained in our minds and in our memories, and that things should be a certain way, and that, you know, not just the story of Jesus, but like Christmas should happen this way, you know, presents should happen
right.
this way,
yeah.
decorations yeah. should happen this way, cooking making should happen this way.
Tradition leans heavy
yes,
upon us.
Yes, Christmas
this time
carol
of year.
Should happen this yeah. way. And I think that extends to wanting, or the desire to preserve the story as this beautiful little sparkling moment in our minds that brings us comfort and peace. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, no. There should be peace that comes in those moments too. I mean,
but this pandemic has made Advent more real in a way for many of us, where kind of all of those beautiful little traditions that we have that do bring us so much joy have been stripped away. And I think we have to ask ourselves what's underneath that? Does it kind of ruin it for us, or does it make it more real? Does it put the focus on something that was always there, but maybe we kind of covered it up with the beauty and the hopefulness of the season? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely. And I think this cuts right back to the Magnificat, to Mary's song, because mm-hmm. it's asking that question of, can we sing this song and actually hear the words?
Yeah.
And if we actually hear the words, are we willing to sit with the discomfort that maybe they bring, mm-hmm. or the challenge that it brings, or the anxiety mm-hmm. that it potentially brings? Can we sit with the fullness of who Mary is and who she's bringing to this song when she sings it? Right? I mean, that we'll get some of this story next week, but the backdrop is Mary and Elizabeth, both of them are having unexpected pregnancies. Both of them are living in strangeness. And they're also both, they're both women who are given voice. And I love this. I mean, Zechariah gets shut up. It's fantastic because like in reality, it's taking those who are on the absolute margins, women who are pregnant, whose society is like, you have no value. You shouldn't even be pregnant. This shouldn't be happening. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. And what are they? They're given places of honor, of privilege. They're lifted up. And that's the backdrop to what Mary is, where he sings, is now singing. And it's like this, in some ways, this, like thinking about the canticle of the turning had started earlier. I mean, before we even hear what Mary is proclaiming, in some ways she's embodying it in her life, that the world is being turned upside down, mm-hmm. that she's being turned upside down, but that there's these profound movements happening in that way. And I guess I'm wondering, how do we allow ourselves the space to hear, and to sit with the words, and to say, okay, that's uncomfortable, and either let it go, mm-hmm. and, you know, because maybe this year we need to just cut straight to Silent Night. I don't know. I mean, or whoever, whatever you need in your life. But at the same time, maybe we also need to spend time thinking about what is unjust in this world, mm-hmm. what needs to be turned upside down. Where are the places where we need the mountains to come down and the valleys to come up?
Mm-hmm. And too, I think this is such a situation of shame.
Oh, yeah.
And where does God take those broken places for us, right? We talked at the very beginning, too, about recognizing within ourselves that, you know, maybe sometimes we are the lowly who need to be brought up, but many times we, too, are the high and the mighty who need to be brought down.
Yeah.
And in that breaking or lifting up, there are still the broken pieces of ourselves, right? That's like kind of the great common denominator between all of us, right? There are places of brokenness. There are places of shame. And those places are so real here for Mary.
Absolutely.
And so how does God take all of those things and, you know, just like Zacchaeus, right? Zacchaeus isn't brought low just so that he can be a spectacle of lowliness, but he's brought low so that God can change what was in his life into something holy. And I think it all comes back to that transformation, right? Of that God can, right? We'll hear for next week, right? That in the text with Mary and Elizabeth, when Mary goes to Elizabeth and finds out that they're both pregnant and going to have children, one very young, Mary, and one very old, right? Something that seems impossible, but just like in Sarah and Abraham, they proclaim nothing is impossible for God.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how do we kind of let go and realize that God is creating a wonderful change within us, and that change is happening within this story too, and trusting that what comes of that change will be made holy.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that trusting that change, that is made holy, and also trusting that God's holiness is bound up in God's yeses and God's noes, right?
I love that. Yeah.
That in this, like, that there's a big yes to Mary, and Mary says yes, but it's also bound with the God is saying no to injustice in this, saying no to certain things, and that God's holiness is in both of those spaces. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that's one of the things that is a challenge, and maybe I'll lift that up before myself, before all of you listening, is that how am I aware of what God is saying yes to right now in transformation, and what God is in the transformative means through Mary, through Jesus, through all of us, is also saying no to? And am I listening? Am I singing along? Mm-hmm. I mean, am I able to join that chorus? Because I think it's not an easy question. But I also think, thinking about what Pastor Molly, you were saying just a moment ago, is that ultimately this is a season of transformation. Mm-hmm. And I guess I wonder if, as we head toward Bethlehem, what each of us, sees in the transformation that God has laid before us.
Yeah.
And where we see hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think most importantly, opening ourselves up for it.
Yeah.
That nothing is impossible with God. We read last night during Holden Evening Prayer this poem by Sarah R. called Mary. And there's one line that's really sticking with me. The poem is essentially about a Christmas pageant and her as a child getting to choose to be Mary. And she says this, "For even at that age, even as a child, we could tell that Mary was afraid. And into that dark, Mary sang." Mm. And so I think that's a great reminder for us that there will be discomfort. There will be fear. Because change means that those things happen, right? That it's scary, that it'll be uncomfortable, that we might not like it all the time. But even when we're on the precipice of that, do we sing? And I think singing for Mary means turning it over, right? Turning her heart and her mind to God in the greatest, in her whole body, turning her whole body over to God in a way that is so powerful and transformative.
Yeah. So as you go about this week, mm-hmm. The days ahead, we're not quite to the darkest day of the year yet.
Although it feels like it.
Although it feels like it at times. You know, where does Mary sing into the darkness, and where do you hear the singing? And I'm gonna throw another challenge out there. Are you singing into the darkness? Mm-hmm. And if you can, do it.
Yeah.
Amen. Give a voice.
Yeah.
So thank you. I mean, for joining us here, as you kind of notice, you essentially get to sit on the couch with Pastor Molly and me as we wander and navigate these texts and enjoy them and explore them. We hope that you find meaning and at least some entertainment and some learning in the process of joining us here. But it's a delight to just get to be connected to you over the sound waves wherever you're listening. So once again, you've been listening to the Queen City Preachers Podcast here at Messiah Lutheran Church. I'm Pastor Andrew.
And I'm Pastor Molly.
Thank you for being with us. Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you here next week.